Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Somos un agujero en medio del mar y el cielo. 500 años después, una raza encendida.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and yes, that is not the Brian Lehrer theme music, but now we are going to take a trip to Latin America with my next guest, who is an American literary critic, educator, scholar, writer, editor, and public intellectual. He has received numerous honorary degrees, awards for his teaching, research, and the development of academic institutions to study Black culture. But he is perhaps best known to many Americans as the host of the PBS television series African American Lives, in which he explored the genealogy of prominent African Americans. He also hosted Black in Latin America, which we are going to talk about today. He is, of course, Henry Louis Gates, Jr. He is also a professor at Harvard University, where he is the director of the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for African and African American Research. Dr. Gates, welcome.
Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, you did it yourself. I simply read it. So Henry Louis Gates, Black in Latin America, aired on PBS. There's also a book of the same title. Mm-hmm. And in both, you consider the question how race and racism play out in the Caribbean. First, could you talk a little bit about the project? Where did you go and what did you find?
Well, Black in Latin America is the third in a trilogy that I designed in 1998. The first part of the trilogy was a six-hour program called Wonders of the African World. The second series ran in 2004 called America Behind the Color Line. And the third was Black in Latin America, which just aired in April and May. So you can see I wanted to do the Black world. I wanted to do Africa, Black America, and then the Caribbean and Latin America. So then how do you pick? There are all those islands in the Caribbean and all those countries in South America. So we had different principles. We could only do 4 hours. So at the most, you could do six countries. So we did. You had to do Brazil because Brazil got most of the slaves. And I'll come back to that in a minute. And Brazil is a Lusophone country, meaning a Portuguese-speaking country. And that made it unique because it's Portuguese and because it is so huge. Brazil was a slam dunk. And then Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Haiti was so much in the news. We all watched Anderson Cooper every night during the terrible earthquake on CNN. And it's played such a curious role in American history. Most people don't know that. Most people think of it as the site of quote-unquote voodoo, you know, some bizarre religion supposedly that Hollywood has parodied and denigrated for years and years. And most of us don't realize that Haiti and the Dominican Republic are on the same island. And it's very interesting, as we'll come back to, that they have constructed their national identities in opposition to each other. So we had Brazil, Haiti, and Dominican Republic. That's three. Then I wanted to do a counterintuitive program, something you would say, my God, I had no idea that Black people even lived in X or Y. And those countries are Mexico and Peru. Mexico and Peru received over 700,000 African slaves over the course of the slave trade. Do you know how many slaves the United States received?
Hit us with it.
450,000. There were more slaves that came to Mexico and Peru together than came to the entire United States. And in Brazil, 4.8 million Africans came in the slave trade, more than 10 times the number of slaves that came to the United States. And finally, Cuba, our nearest neighbor. We've had such a fraught relationship with Cuba since 1959 when Fidel Castro and Che Guevara led their revolution. But Cuba and America have had intimate connections culturally, politically, historically for a very long time. So those were the six countries. And we grouped them together into 4 hours, and we did Black in Latin America.
And indeed, so many good bits of information like those you just shared with us that many Americans may find themselves surprised to learn if they read the book or watch the series, and certainly this last bit of the trilogy, Black in Latin America. So much we don't know about Latin America here in the United States. Let's focus a bit, if we could, Dr. Gates, on the Dominican Republic, because so many of our listeners here at WNYC are from the Dominican Republic, still have family there, a strong connection to the place. You are also an editor-in-chief of The Root, and wrote a piece there about your experience visiting the Dominican Republic, especially about race and vis-a-vis its neighbor, Haiti. And we're going to invite our listeners with a connection to the Dominican Republic to call in 212-433-9692 about their life experience in that context, 212-433-9692, or they can go to WNYC.org and post a comment there. But can you make the comparison? You touched on it just a moment ago in your remarks, but say a little bit more about the dichotomy there. How can two countries and cultures be so close and yet so different in so many ways? Not only different language, different national sports, different religion traditions, even different time zones. You write about all of that, but perhaps most of all, different self identities and sense of themselves in terms of race and ethnicity.
The contrast between the DR and Haiti is stark. And it's starkest when you stand on the Massacre River on a Friday morning at 8 a.m. The Massacre River separates Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And I have to say up front, I love the Dominican Republic and its people and culture, and I love Haiti too. So what I'm about to say is not meant to be judgmental, but just to be descriptive as a scholar. The Haiti and the Dominican Republic have constructed their identities in opposition to each other. Haiti became independent from the French in 1804. It's the first black republic in the world. Ethiopia was free, but it was a monarchy. And this is the first time that slaves ever rebelled against the European colonial power and actually won. I mean, won long enough in order to declare themselves free. It's something that all people who love freedom should herald and honor every year, the Haitian Independence Day. But between 1822 and 1844, Haiti occupied Santo Domingo, the Spanish eastern end of the island. The Dominican Republic is the only country in the New World that celebrates its independence not from a European colonial power, but from another country in the New World, and that's Haiti. And when Haiti occupied the Dominican Republic, they did all kind of things that really angered the people. They tried to get them to speak French and not Spanish. They confiscated lands belonging to the elite and to the church, et cetera, et cetera. So it was not a happy time.
And that's another fascinating tidbit about the New World, the only place in the New World with that particular piece of history, that particular bit of history that defines it from that moment forward.
Absolutely. And so in the film, I'm standing on the Massacre River, which was the site of the massacre of over 15,000 Haitians by General Trujillo in 1937. Because in the Dominican Republic, under Trujillo, the migrant workers were Haitians, and they were demonized. And so he declared at the time, about the same time that Hitler is committing genocide on Jewish people, Trujillo commits genocide on the Haitians, that all their problems will be solved if they just get rid of these Haitians. And so he unleashes the army and kills over 15,000 people in this terrible, terrible massacre on the aptly named Massacre River. So the border is closed, but it's open every Friday morning. It's called Market Day. So I'm standing there. It's 8 o'clock on the Dominican side. It's 7 o'clock on the Haitian side. That's the first difference. You can throw a stone across the river. On the Dominican side, the national sport is baseball. On the Haitian side, it's soccer or football. The Haitians define themselves as black. The Dominicans define themselves as an ethnic identity that they've created called Indio. And this is what's of interest in our discussion. The common expression that Dominicans used historically was that they were Catholic, Spanish, and white. And And they have constructed an identity, an ethnic identity, that is called Indio, which is meant to be mestizo or mulatto.
And Dr. Gates, I'm going to interrupt you because we actually have a clip from your documentary.
Oh, good.
It's a man you interviewed named Juan Rodriguez.
Yes.
The anthropologist, the director of cultural diversity at the Dominican Ministry of Culture. And here he is speaking about that very word, Indio.
Well, by the 19th century, we didn't have any native indigenous people.
No.
Like in South America. So it didn't apply to us. But it was a way to use the word Indio to actually negate our African ancestry, mm-hmm. and then became something else. Because when you look at Dominicans, we cannot say, honestly, that we are Anglo-Saxon. If you look around, I mean, look at me. I am black.
You are black.
I asked him, I said, Juan, when did you discover you were black? You see, I walked all over each of these countries asking people who was black. And then I ask them what color I would be in their society. So in the Dominican Republic, I would say, are you black? They'd say, oh, no, no. I said, well, who's black? They go, oh, the Haitians.
Oh, Dr. Gates. And he says to actually negate our African ancestry.
Yeah, and by 1550, there were only 500 Taino Indians left. They had all been massacred or killed by diseases. So the overwhelming, and if you look at DNA studies, the overwhelming, Dominicans are overwhelmingly white and black in their DNA with much smaller percentages of Native American ancestry, and that's because the Native Americans have been dead for so very long. Mm. So I asked Juan Rodriguez, I said, well, Juan, you are a proud black man. When did you learn that you were black? He said, when I went to New York.
Well, you know, speaking of that, we have a call from Fabio. I should say you have a call because he's calling to speak with you. Fabio from Manhattan. Fabio, you're on WMYC. You have the honor of being on with Dr. Henry Louis Gates, Jr.
Hey, Fabio.
Good morning, doctor.
How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, actually, I'm an immigrant. I came here as a young child, and until recently, I kind of accepted the fact that I am descended of blacks, because in my culture, really, I'm a Latino, really mm-hmm. a little Haitian. I always thought I was a Hispanic person with roots and so forth, and I kind of denied it. But from what I noticed, my people are very racist towards blacks, mostly mm-hmm. because in my country, it compared the Haitians to how Mexicans are viewed down south by the very conservative people. So
yes.
It's always kind of a down to say that you are that. No, we're Dominicans. We're, you know, I have cousins that are blonde and blue eyes, mm-hmm. and they're direct cousins of mine within mm-hmm. the same gene pool. And my sister just had a baby with Irish-Italian men, blonde, blue eyes, and their baby came out very particular. So it's like our genealogy is just mixed, and I've always been proud of the fact that I have very mixed blood in me, and I'm not defined by one group of people.
Oh, no, I would agree with that. But the issue is, my concern is when we claim a mixed-race identity at the expense of the African element. And that has happened too far in the history of the Dominican Republic, as you know. Trujillo, I filmed in the National Museum where Trujillo's monument, I mean, formal dress, the automobile that was used to assassinate him, mm-hmm. etc. And we filmed his whitening powder. I mean, he had this huge thing. Every time he went out in public, he whitened his skin. And he had a black grandmother. He had a Haitian grandmother. And we filmed this national catalog of Come to Dominican Republic, 1956. You mm-hmm. would think you were in Switzerland or someplace, man. There was nobody. I mean, even mulattoes were too dark to be in this thing. I'm talking about, the mother of my children was white. I am 50% white in my DNA, which makes my children 75% white in their DNA.
Yes.
I'm not some kind of racial lunatic, you know, against intermixing. I just think that when the black element gets buried or devalued, and it's something people are ashamed of, that bothers me.
Yes, we must embrace all of our history.
We have to, and they have to be equal at the the world's great table of civilization.
And your larger series, Black in Latin America, and then the three-part series, which, as you say, goes back to the full three-part series, Black in Latin America is the third of a triumvirate. And your book reveal how huge a role history can play in forming a nation's concept of race, any nation's, and of course our own here. What then is the lesson for humanity going forward?
Well,
and you know, I have about a minute, but that's a big question for a 1 minute. 1 minute, but you're Dr. Gates.
No, the lesson is that we should excavate all of our roots and be equally proud of each aspect of our roots, and that we should know there's a long history of anti-black racism embedded in the West because of slavery. Black human beings had to be devalued in order to justify them being transformed from men and women into objects and property. And that when there ensued, to justify that dehumanization, an ideology, a metaphysics, stereotypes, popular advertising, representations in film and popular culture, my God, so that people often are ashamed of their blackness in a mixed-race society. And I saw that in the Dominican Republic, but I saw it in Piedmont, West Virginia, where I was born. And you see it in the United States. You still see it. It's still tough to be dark-skinned with kinky hair and African features. And the one common theme that I analyzed in each of the six countries in the film and the book is that the poorest people in, whether it's Cuba or Mexico or Peru or Brazil or Haiti or the DR, the poorest people are the people with the thickest lips, the kinkiest hair, and the blackest skin.
And here as well.
Yep.
All right, Dr. Gates, so much we can learn from you, and we will continue to do that.
Thank you
so much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Henry Louis Gates, Jr., the director of the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute at Harvard University, and it was a pleasure to have Dr. Gates with us. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. We'll be right back.